Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi tonight. And joining me on the other end of the line, I've got three legends of the waterfowl world. We'll start with the youngest, Mr. Patrick Pitt. Mr. Pat Pitt. Wait, I may have that backwards. Mr. Bill Cooksey and then Mr. Pat Pitt.
Yeah, I'm older than both of them put together.
Guys, I know there's a lot of people. I posted it up. We were recording tonight. A lot of people interacted with that post, and I know they're looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Look, I brought this up with Justin Martin yesterday, because we kind of delved into it a little bit in that podcast, talking about what happened this year. And one thing that I asked him, do you think, and I know that you guys have got a lot of points coming, but I want to open up with this one, and that's bird numbers. Do you think there could be issues with the counts?
Go ahead, Bill. You and I talked about that yesterday.
We did. And look, I think people have a hard time looking at the counts for what they are. It is not meant to be a census. It is meant to be a snapshot, and Patrick can probably actually talk more about this than I can, of a specific area, whether it's the you know, pairs count, whether it's the counts on, you know, in Louisiana when Larry's Reynolds is running his counts. They fly certain areas, they do a count, and it gives them long-term trends. It's not a census of how many ducks we truly 100% have. I mean, that's just, they have to base it on something they can average over the years. So I think in that regard, yes, there are questions, but it goes year to year and can change.
All right. Well, let me just say this. I'm not going to talk a lot in this podcast because I'm just as anxious to hear what you guys have to say as everybody else. All right. With these migration reports, which Patrick is a part of, you talk to people from all across the United States that do these reports, and nobody really ever saw large concentrations of waterfowl, of ducks. Where were they? If the numbers are right on, where were they?
Well, in a year like this year, with the mild weather conditions, lots of rain across pretty much the entire United States, birds had a lot of places to be. They didn't have to be concentrated in a small area due to food or due to lack of water or due to severe weather. They could spread out and do whatever they wanted, pretty much.
Basically, they were wherever the concentration of water and food was, which was everywhere.
Yeah, thanks to no-till farming.
Well, I'll say this, and Bill, you and I spent some time on a podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago talking about this. There were and I'm not advocating going hunting, but up and down the river, if you talk to hunters that were hunting on the Mississippi River, there's a lot of birds killed. They were stomping a mud hole in them inside those right. river levees.
Mm-hmm. And we had some good times right there at New Year's when the river was jumping. There were ducks in West Tennessee, but there was a ton of habitat. It was warm. They were flying at night, just like the people in northern Missouri were griping about. When people in Louisiana were saying northern Missouri had all the birds, northern Missouri was griping because the ducks were nocturnal. And we had the same thing. But when the river jumped, those ducks had to move, and duck hunters were able to take advantage.
Well, if you look at some of the reports from, you know, like Forbes Biological Station, you know, hell, in January, 400,000 mallards on the Illinois River up there with the season closed and no snow mm-hmm. on the ground. So, you know, the birds, they got a banquet set out in front of them and nobody harassing them.
Right.
And we can't fix the weather. I mean, the Earth's axis may need to be tilted one way or another, but we can't fix the weather. There's nothing we can do about that. But there's some other things that we can work toward. And a lot of people aren't going to like what I think or what I got to say about it, but I've been watching this trend since 1963. I've seen things that I'll never see again, and I know Patrick has too. I mean, we've already, you know, beat the horse to death, you know, talking about when RoboDucks made the scene and some statements I made then, and what I'm seeing now and what I'm seeing on these videos in Canada and whatnot. But there's a lot of points in the formula for what's going on. And, you know, I don't know if we can cover them all or not. But Bill pointed out the acreage of no-till farming to me yesterday. I didn't know how much it was, but it was a bunch. But, you know, he's got a pretty solid number on that. And,
Bradley, I think, came up with it was 96 million acres as of 2016, I believe, were the latest numbers. 96 million acres of no-till grain just in the U.S.
And well, you put 8 million ducks that are in the Mississippi Flyway or how many ever on 96 million acres. I mean, that's one duck per football field or per county or whatever. I mean, that can spread out a lot of birds. And then when you add to the fact that their buffet isn't closed with snow, you know, why exert and burn the calories to go further south when you don't have to?
I got a question for y'all, because a lot of people are wondering this, because Bill, you brought it up just a few minutes ago, but why? What made these birds go nocturnal? Because it wasn't just here in Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas. You heard that all the way up and down the flyway, even in the central flyway. These birds went nocturnal, feeding at night, like they've never done before. We've always seen birds feed on a full moon, but never in the pitch black dark.
Or pouring down rain.
Well, right now, this year, it was very stable weather. The ducks stayed in one place for an extended time, and pressure. As Pat said, we can't change the weather. The places that stayed consistent or at least stayed having good shoots at times were managing their pressure all season long. Everywhere else, they tried to shoot them every day, and the ducks stayed nocturnal, and you couldn't hunt them. I mean, my place, and we took a lot of pressure off, but I could walk in every morning and hear a couple of thousand ducks get up. And they didn't come back till we were done for the day.
Well, with the weather as mild as it was everywhere,
yep.
Birds weren't pressured to feed. They could feed mm-hmm. one time a day and loaf. And like Bill said, if they were pressure, you know, with the hunting pressure, and the mild weather combined, they went nocturnal quick because they knew they could go feed that one time and then go sit somewhere all day and most likely not get messed with. They didn't have to feed two or three or four times a day because they weren't burning any calories.
Right.
Well, the birds showed up in our area not already nocturnal. And
yeah.
I relate that to they were stressed where they came from. They learned from being stressed, and they figured, well, we'll just carry this nocturnal feeding over when we get down the road because it's worked so far and it's going to continue to work.
And y'all, I'll go back to if anyone read Warren Coco's write-up about duck season. I think he did
good.
A phenomenal job with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back to 2003 and 2004 as kind of the last time it was almost this bad. It wasn't this bad, but I remember those years. And we were talking about, yeah, that was close on the heels to Southern Illinois losing their geese. And I can remember sitting around in the Avery offices and in duck camps and different places. Are the ducks now doing the same thing? Then 06 came and they started coming back. So, you know, hopefully it's not a indicator of next season, you know, that this year was the norm. But we went through it before, but not this bad.
Well, Patrick mentioned that it could be cyclic. And, you know, just like the lemmings going to the sea or whatnot, or the bunny rabbits, you know, up and down years or rough grouse or whatever, it's a good point that, and we can only hope that this is a cycle that's fixing to hit an upswing, you know, down the road. I hope it's, you know, soon, but Patrick mentioned that the other day. You know, I'd thought of it, but I hadn't even, you know, brought it up. But that's a good point, too. I mean, but we're causing this stress on these birds by this
absolutely,
you know, continuous liberal season. I'll go to my grave with spin-wing decoys, and there's probably some asshole out there that'll stick one up on my grave just to spite me. But that is putting a lot
of we're
going to
have four.
Do what?
We're going to have one on each corner, Pat.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, it'll keep the flies off of me. But, you know, it's just everybody wants the longest season and the biggest limit. They want to stay out in the field until they get their very last bird. And they don't care if it's a hen mallard or a ruddy duck. I mean, they want, you know, their grip and grin pictures to be full up. And it's past time to quit doing that. I harp on my guys at the camp, you know, if y'all are in a pit and you got limits of mallards straight across for three or four, if you get out of the field. I mean, sit out there wanting to kill a shoveler or a teal just to get your fifth and sixth duck, you know, you're hurting it for everybody else. Dave Hall with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and I want to bring this up. Back in the 80s, or early 80s, late 70s, when we first met, inauspiciously, actually, but, you know, we talked about it then. He brought up, he said, the doomsday clock on waterfowl hunting is ticking. And, you know, I thought he was, you know, full of crap, but he said, we're losing football fields size chunks of land in South Louisiana daily, weekly, monthly, however long it takes. And Bill, I know you know more than that about that than I do, but he said birds' habits are going to change. They're going to have to adapt to different things that they've ever dealt with, and some of the veteran ducks, and that's been brought up too, between, you know, like super hens and whatnot. Some of the veteran ducks have learned, just like a wild turkey, to do things that don't get them killed, to not just, you know, join the flock, you know, wherever most of them go. They're branching out in places, and it looked like the Mississippi Flyway moved into Kansas and Oklahoma last year. I know they had a lot of ducks over there, but There's no quick and easy fix for this, but I'd love to see a 40-day season four-duck limit, two mallards for that matter.
It'll never happen.
That's
something I'd love to talk more about. I mean, to answer the Louisiana coastal question, that's a football field every 100 minutes. That is the current.
I knew it was something unbelievable.
Now, like 2 years ago, that was a football field an hour. You know, it changes year to year. But right now, it's every 100 minutes. And according to Larry Reynolds and some other biologists I was on a call with back in the fall, and this is some of the stuff Pat talked about earlier, just to get on Louisiana for a minute, they've lost, and this is before this duck season. So this duck season isn't even part of this deal. They've lost about 40% of their duck use days. So 40% of their ability to have ducks. And to put that in a small scale, if you had a swimming pool that ducks like to go to and you got 100 ducks a day and all of a sudden you only had enough water there for 60 ducks a day, that's the deal. Louisiana can only hold that many. And not only have they lost those duck use days, and that's through coastal land loss and agriculture changes, rice farming shifting to sugar cane, rice farming shifting to crawfish farming, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on down there. So they've lost those use days. Their duck counts have been down about 40%. Their kills have been down about 40%. What really gets interesting, because folks will explain that away with weather or with flooded, heated cornfields up north or whatever, but mottled ducks are also down about 40%. And those don't leave the state of Louisiana, no matter how much corn is in Missouri.
I want to ask y'all this. Y'all all hunt fields over in Arkansas. Have you seen a decrease in shoveler numbers the past couple of years? The number that you see and the number that you kill?
We didn't see the shoveler numbers this year that in a normal year we would see. I mean, we got one field that's, you know, if you need a shoveler to sustain life, you can go there and kill it. But I know there's going to be a decrease in shovelers last year because we didn't let one of them fly by without getting killed, just to show you what the season was like. You know, boys and I were talking about it the other night. Last year, I didn't pull the trigger on a shoveler. I was with 9 killed last year. This year, 113 shovelers died in the pits I was in. And I don't know where they're going or what they're doing, but we didn't see the huge bunches of shovelers except maybe once or twice.
Bunches of ducks anyway, so.
Well, yeah, too. But, I mean, you know, generally there's.
Green-winged teal.
Oh, yeah, there's another one.
Gone.
Biggest flock of green wings I saw all year was maybe 20.
The Boot Hill of Missouri I was in last weekend of last season, up there this year, I didn't see a single teal. I did not see a single green wing my whole trip.
Well, except for opening day, I can't remember being in double figures on green wing teal any time during the season. I mean, 2-3 maybe. A lot of times, you know, we'd go a week and not even see one. And they're generally our bread and butter, you know, bird as far as, you know, something tasty and fun to shoot and good to eat.
Well, especially early.
I felt bad because we had a big cooking at the camp opening weekend, and my wife loves green-winged teal, and I normally try to hold on to a bunch for, and I don't have a whole lot of green-winged teal to cook because we ate most of them opening night.
You know, the gadwall has become the bread and butter of Mississippi. Man, there hadn't been some of the people that I hunt with and know the best have some of the best gadwall holes in the state. They had more than 20 or 40 or 50 gadwall in some of these holes that used to hold thousands.
And Jim Cruz, I believe, talked with him, and I think they killed more mallards and gadwalls. Or, I mean, it was that wasn't their bread and butter duck this year, I don't believe.
Where are they?
Well, evidently, they're staying up north and eating corn, too.
Yeah, that's about number 10 on their list to eat on the buffet is corn.
Somebody showed me a picture, but I don't know if it was this year, last year, whenever it was, a cornfield somewhere, and divers were feeding in it along with the mallards. Don't
Mark
tell me that
proved divers will eat corn.
Why, sure they will. That used to be one of my favorite decoys. But don't tell me that ducks can't adapt and change their habits, you know, virtually overnight. Stress related, weather related, or whatever you want to put on it. But you as a waterfowl hunter, and me as somebody that's bought the hat and a t-shirt forever, are seeing things that just aren't normal to what we're used to seeing. And it's becoming a trend, not a fluke, but it's becoming a trend. We keep great numbers of what we kill in Arkansas each year. We keep up with the mallards and the specks and the geese and the ducks and which pit and this, that, and the other. You know, mallards are trending down, specks are trending up. It seems like, you know, every year we get a higher percentage of specks than we do mallards. I know we kill more specks this year than we did mallards, you know, which isn't a bad thing, but, you know, damn, where are the mallards going?
Well, and the specks weren't easy for most folks this year because, just like the snow, they're pretty mature.
Yeah, we killed, what, Patrick? 5-1 adults to juveniles, something like that.
Yeah. Probably so. But yeah, that can be attributed to that. There was a late storm after a lot of nests had hatched this year that was very detrimental to the goslings. I mean, I was in the area that it affected. It was something only like 10% survival, and. I mean, of course, you know, specks and snows are all up there in the same habitat. So, I mean, it hit them all pretty equally.
Well, we joke about these specks are picking up bad habits from snow geese, but, Lord, I saw some huge flocks of specks this year that, you know, wouldn't even dip a wing at you when you'd, you know, call to them.
Yeah.
You know,
but let's face it, the ducks were about the same way this year.
Yeah, I'd like for them to at least do something when I blow a call so I'll know that they heard me or what. But, I mean, I got ignored, you know, more times than I did from the homecoming queen when I graduated from high school. I mean, they just went on.
I thought about pulling the trigger a few times just to see if I could make them flare.
Yeah. Yeah, I told Patrick one day, I said, you know, might as well shoot, let them know we're here.
Yeah.
And
that's something a lot of people don't give any credence to when they talk about a bad duck season and how quick they get nocturnal and how they're shy of everything. I mean, it was crazy. I'd be over at my place in Arkansas, and we're all blinded up, everything's hidden, the decoys look great, and the ducks would just skirt us. They wouldn't flare, but they wouldn't commit, and they just slide by. And all of a sudden, then we're hunting after New Year's in Tennessee when those ducks were having to move around. We had ducks just coming and landing in the decoys. Amazing how you get to be a genius all of a sudden when a duck is a little bit stressed and forced to move around. But you give a mature duck a stable weather and stable water, whew.
Well, you don't think of this scenario with as mild weather as we had a lot of days with little or no wind. If these ducks are sitting on one of our irrigation reservoirs or sitting on a crane farm or where our clay pools or wherever, when I hear that first shot go off at shooting time, it rings a bell, and they're saying, we could get killed if we don't just sit here. Let's just wait and go in and eat tonight. And they weren't pushed to have to move in the mornings. I mean, it's like Pavlov's dogs. They know when the bell goes off that something's going to happen, and in that situation, it wasn't going to be something good.
That's exactly right. I mean, with this weather, we didn't get the numbers of ducks that we would normally have, but we had decent numbers at times in Arkansas and in parts of Arkansas. And same with Tennessee, same with Louisiana. But they didn't have to do a damn thing. I mean, my weather app, every day I pull up a little town next to my duck camp in Arkansas. From Thanksgiving on, the top bar has been the red flood warning bar every day. That has not deviated. There's been a flood warning. Man, they can go anywhere they want to go. The fact you kill anything this year is really probably the stranger part.
Well, I thought we did pretty good. I made a statement, you know, after we totaled everything up. I said, well, we killed more than we did last year. And then Patrick, what was it you brought up about the freeze?
Well, we lost 22 days last year to ice, where we were frozen solid, you know, picking up the walk home for 22 days. And we only lost one single day this season. We had open water 59 of the 60 days.
Wow. That's unheard of in Northeast Arkansas, isn't it?
Well, it is. And if we took the 22 days away from this season, the birds that were killed, and back out the 70 blue-winged teal we killed before the season, we had a dismal year. I mean, I don't even want to think about what it would have been, but it points to a lot of things. Like I say, we can't do nothing about the weather, but if we don't manage this resource any better than what we're doing, the future generation, the Mary Claires and the Reeds and the Olivias that are my grandkids, they're not going to have anything worth shooting or worth hunting. I mean, a lot of people just going to throw their hands up in the air and say it's just not worth it.
Which in the long run may get us back to where we were before, but...
Well, it could.
It's not
like
the better
I say,
route to take.
Like I say, get away from this liberal season a little bit and let these ducks try to catch their breath. We know damn good and well what happened in Arkansas when they banned robo ducks statewide in what was it, 08, 09, something in there. And
it was beautiful.
Oh gosh, yes. We had one day this year, and I'm thinking it was when Fred was down from Iceland, that we had one flock of ducks that probably had 40 mallards in it. Just cross-threaded all over the top of us, and it was just like a dream. Of course, the wind was goofy. We finally got around to where we could kill a couple of drake, kill two greenheads and a pintail out of it, and we're happy with that, but that's the biggest flock of ducks I've had work me in, gosh, I don't know how many years out there in the fields. I mean, it's different from the timber. And while
people
we're at it...
People don't recognize that, but that's a fact, and you know, I hate harping on spinners because it in some ways it makes us sound as silly as the corn, heated corn deal, except that spinners exist and we've watched how they really reacted and behaved, but and seen what happened when they were outlawed. And I have friends in that business, but dang it. It's just another reminder of those ducks, of that pressure. And Pat brought up hunting in Canada and the Dakotas, the production areas, and you get those dry fields. And you're not just educating a couple of ducks. I mean, you watch the videos, and I've been there and done it. You sit up, and you're shooting into 500, 1,000, You know, 100 birds is a small flock in those dry fields. And you can only kill a few of them. And that happens so many times. And that's just, that's where that pressure begins. It's not education, it's pressure.
Well, it starts and it runs downhill.
Exactly.
The problem with it down here that people, I don't think that they get, there's a number of people in the duck woods that throw a spinner out and they'll decoy a flock of birds into, let's say, 40, 50, 60 yards, and they throw up and shoot at these ducks and they educate them. They may luck up and kill one, but they educated a whole flock because the birds are going to come in just enough just to check and see, you know, check it out, see what's going on down there. And when they realize, most of the time when they realize it's spinning wing, they pull out.
Well, the same thing happens in fields. People will get them out there at that 50, 60, 70-yard threshold, and the birds will start to slide, and they sitting there knowing that they got a super-duper choke with super-duper ammo, and they'll jump up, and five guys will flail into them, and they'll kill one or two, but they'll cripple one or two, and the other one or two realize that that ain't a place to be. So, imprinting, these ducks imprint. I harp on that a lot. And I got to thinking the other night, which is sometimes dangerous, but I can remember when clay people used to ban birds, and they would bait the hell out of those woods and trap birds and ban them on clay pools. And the good thing about it for clay pools or for, you know, for the families involved, it was imprinting those birds on that woods. There's another, and I don't want to mention the name, but there's another tract of woods in Arkansas that has a heck of a banding program, and they're baiting, they're putting corn out, and they're catching these ducks, and they're putting bands on them, and you know, doing all the stuff that biologists do. But the gravy is that they're imprinting all these birds to their area. I mean, it's
can
really
we say what they rhyme
sense.
With?
Hmm?
Can we say what the name rhymes with?
Yeah, most anybody that knows anything about Arkansas probably knows the name anyway. But, I mean, you know, it's just, I don't want to make anybody mad. But, I mean, and it's a great idea if I had the money and the wherewithal to do it. Or if I could get somebody with a licensed bander to say, hey, I got a spot, let's set up some duck traps, and for every duck that you do ban, you got 100 or 200 or 500 that you don't even touch that remember that, and you know, it's just like the super hens coming back to the prairie.
Well, I mean, a lot of the big timber clubs for years now have been flying grain on it as soon as duck season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I don't know if there's a quick fix or not, but I don't feel good about the trend and about the future of this sport that I love so much. So,
that's Bill.
I'm
going to throw you a curveball. I want y'all. This is one that's talked about a lot. Throw your curveball. Have we created a Democrat duck? And what I mean by that is, has the government failed us? I'm not saying that I believe in this. I'm just asking your opinion. Hear it a lot. By not rotating these sanctuaries on these refuges, and on top of that, some of these sanctuaries being planted in food, have we created a Democrat duck? Same thing, go to the park. Don't feed the bears.
Patrick, you're a college graduate. Why don't you?
Well, I mean, I think to an extent, it definitely does have an impact. I mean, it's just like Dad was mentioning a second ago about imprinting birds. You know, they imprint on those areas, and they know they can come back year after year. But if they know that they can come back and there's a buffet waiting for them and there's no pressure, you know, why go anywhere else? And I think I think rotating the rest areas on those refuges would be a great idea. You know, it would mix things up a little bit, of course, but it would allow them also to do some different management techniques as well. I mean, it's not just for the sake of the hunters, but I mean, it would force them to come up with a rotational scheme that would benefit, you know, hunters and waterfowl both, in my mind, anyway.
Well, I'm fine with them rotating that and that sort of thing, but when we're talking about ducks, when they get here, they're already ready to go nocturnal at the slightest bit of pressure. I think it's fine to consider and figure out how to do it because it helps hunters. It can give us a few extra good days, but it's not some big panacea that's suddenly going to cause ducks to migrate like they did in 1999.
True. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I do too. There's no quick fix for this. You got to have all the stars line up for it to be a perfect season, and there seems like there's always something out of kilter, whether it be a warm year, a dry year, a cold year. There was enough water in Arkansas this year, probably more than I have ever seen since I started hunting Arkansas. I'm 71. I mean, every field that, you know, the water couldn't go nowhere because the ditches were full.
I've seen higher water, but I've never seen as much water and from start to finish.
Yeah, for as long as for a longer time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought I'd be letting water out of field start in the middle of the year.
I have a pit that hasn't been flooded in the 23 years that I've hunted this place. Never been flooded. It was never dry this year. We never hunted it. We could not get the water low enough to hunt that field.
I'll say this. I think the least thing that's being talked about in duck hunting right now, the crisis of, and this is not black helicopter, this is true facts, but the problem that we're seeing up on the prairies of Canada, the pothole region of Canada, North and South Dakota, I'm telling you, and talking to Ramsey Russell and a couple of outfitters that I work with up there, it's at detriment levels. And I told Justin this yesterday in the podcast with him, barring a miracle blizzard, it could be bad this year. I know we've got a lot of healthy ducks that never migrated down, but they need 3 to 6 feet of snow. Rain doesn't do it for them. You've got to have snow in that region to replenish the potholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, the ducks that, you know, got all the room in the world to nest are, you know, packed in there like, you know, rats in a ghetto. And the predators, Patrick knows more about that than I do, but boy, if the predators can get all these birds hemmed up in one area instead of scattered all over hell in half of Georgia, it's going to be detrimental on that respect, too.
Well, right now we're looking at rolling back the Clean Water Act on basically and freeing up farmers to drain every damn pothole in the U.S. prairies.
Mm.
And that could happen this spring.
Well, can't all these birds go to the boreal forest to breed? I mean, like pintails do. Like I say, Patrick spent more time up on that prairie than... and he's seen it, and he's seen the changes. But, you know, of course, water is critical, and no doubt about that. But farmers used to, you remember, Bill, in Arkansas, they were paid to leave water on their fields until March 1st. They don't do that no more. I mean, we have farmers just about standing there the last day of the season, start, you know, ready to pull, well, they have pull the plugs on the field as soon as we get out.
I had one year when
– go ahead, Bill.
One year when the farmer was not the landowner. So, in other words, we're paying the landowner, he's paying the landowner, and he didn't care about us at all. The last Friday of duck season, he pulled the plug on our best spot. It cost him pretty good, but I won't say more about that.
Yeah. But Patrick, you can speak to that on a cycle pattern when it comes to the potholes. Them drying up and then refilling back up, it's good for the ducks. It may be bad for the numbers and bad for us hunters, but in a cycle pattern that these waterfowl go through, especially with the potholes, it's a good thing, right?
It is, to an extent it is. Those, you know, when they dry up and it allows the vegetation to grow, and then all of a sudden they get water in there again, and it, you know, the invertebrate population increases, and that's what the waterfowl are feeding on in the springtime, as opposed to grain. You know, their diet changes because their nutritional requirements change. You know, they need a heavy protein diet during breeding season, and you know, your grain crops just don't provide that. So that with the potholes, like say, drying down and then replenishing themselves, I mean, that's part of what's supposed to happen. But there's years where, you know, they get dry and stay dry, and then, you know, that's when it obviously affects breeding and nesting and recruitment. So
for the hunter, it may suck in the short term, but in the long term, it is for the benefit of us all.
Right.
But the key is that habitat needs to stay in a condition where when the snow comes back, the potholes return.
True.
And on a lot of the landscape, that's not what's happening.
Well, that's why Devil's Lake has grown thousands and thousands of acres over the years. I mean, you know, there's towns that are underwater now and all kinds of stuff because they're plowing fields right up to the edge of the cattails as close as they can get that tractor to there. And that runoff water doesn't have anywhere to go. You know, that wetland has been destroyed, and it just has to go to that lake.
Right. And the more possible we may, let's face it, we have the technology now. That ground is easy to drain and tile and put it in cultivation. And with the ethanol stuff going on, I don't blame farmers for doing it. But it hurts, and we change those rules, that's going to be a double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you get a track hoe out there and start digging channels and cuts and canals and everything from pothole to pothole to pothole, and to where it'll run off into a creek or a river or like Devil's Lake. You know, you've destroyed that forever, basically. I mean, you've changed the contour of the ground. I've even seen that in Argentina, when I've been down there in some of the areas where they're draining the potholes down there by cutting canals across the pampas, that, you know, all of a sudden all these beautiful potholes that Gary Zom said looked like Canada back in the 40s and the 50s aren't there anymore. The same thing's happening up there, you know, when they, you know, start making these potholes into farmland. So,
yeah, I flew into Chicago I guess it was in March of last year.
You carry a gun?
And the what?
Did you carry a gun? Or did,
no,
they, give, or did
they
give you one when you landed?
I only had a layover in Chicago. I should have said I just had a layover. But going in, I was actually going to D.C. and for some reason had to go through Chicago. But the angle of approach we took, it took me over an area that from the altitude we were at, you could tell that had been prairie pothole. You looked at the ground, and you could see the outlines, even though the cornfields were cut right through them and had been for who knows how long. But there hadn't been a pond there probably in 50 years. And now that's what you're seeing all over. We don't even think about Northern Illinois anymore as a production area for ducks, but it was at one time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, like I say, it's gone forever. It's vanishing paradise.
Yep. Both ends of the flyway are disappearing, and we're sitting here worried about heated corn ponds.
Yeah, or nuclear discharge. You know, that's such a minuscule percentage. That's people that read something in a newspaper about it, or CNN said something and they believed it. You know, that ain't anywhere near the big picture of what's going on.
I want to ask, this is purely opinion because we don't have facts to back this up, but I want to ask you guys something. Do you think, because there's pictures of my granddad with Canada geese, migratory Canada geese, and we've talked about this before, but purely opinion, do you think that the mallards could be following the Canada's path? That
sure.
Slowly, every year, inching further and further north that they're staying?
They absolutely have. They're just not big and hardy enough to do it like a Canada.
Right, right. But the they may be behind a step or two or three, but, you know, the same thing happened in Ballard County, Kentucky, Southern Illinois and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
The geese quit coming, and don't you think that it's not possible for the mallards to quit coming too? They're going to catch on even more than they already have, and they're going to adapt and figure out a way to get something to eat and get something to drink and not fly 1,000 miles or 10,000 miles or 50 feet if they can, you know, do it. I mean, I've got people that friends up in Canada that, you know, they had ducks up there when our season closed. So it's coming. It's already here, actually.
Let me ask you this. I want to hear this from all three of y'all. If we could pray to God and get exactly what we wish for, to correct everything that's going on right now, how many years in a row of just cold weather, to correct it to, say, 10 or 15 years ago, how many years in a row we have to have that? Fix it.
To undo
the
what we've got.
Come right back.
Right.
Yeah. They'll do just like the mallards did in Arkansas when they banned robo ducks. They'll come right back.
What I'm saying is from the standpoint of a hen teaching her young to come here.
I believe one generation, if the weather makes them come, they're going to find the best habitat. And I'm not saying imprinting doesn't matter. If they were somewhere last year and they fed good and they get to that area again this year and the conditions are the same, I imagine they're going to go to that place that they fed last year. But the main thing is, are they pushed by the weather to get to that area, to that part of the country?
Patrick, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of along with what I think Bill's touching on there, they've got to show up. You know, something's got to force them there more than once before they latch on to that location for whatever reason. So, I don't think, you know, one year would be a quick fix, but I think it would take two or three years for it to start to see a substantial difference in it.
Yes, well, I think it'd be a 2 or 3 year process too.
I agree with that. And these hens that are dead, they can't bring their young here no more. Impossible. They'll never lay another egg. We've got to have a nucleus to build on, okay? We don't have that nucleus to build on. The point system days knocked a hole in the nucleus of the pintails at 10-pointers. I mean, I'll go to my grave believing that, too, because I've seen flocks of pintails that would defy the imagination. And then mm-hmm. we're down to one pintail next year. So, you know, you put something like that coupled with a drought or something catastrophic weather-wise, you know, we may be trying to find that last Labrador duck to kill. I mean, that's a little graphic and probably a little far-fetched and ranting of a crazy man, but, you know, this extra duck that we shoot just because it's a hen mallard and we can, or a hen pintail and we can, isn't helping the situation any. And I know that, you know, if one person does it or 10 people do it or 100 people do it, it's just exponentially going downhill. You know, we've got to get these ducks back in the grand scheme of things, and I don't really know how it's going to happen, to be honest with you.
Right. The only thing is we can do. We can't control the weather.
Right.
We just have to hope that this is a temporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can do two things. One is restore habitat, both on the north and southern end of the flyway and in the middle. Whether people like it or not, this flyway was full of habitat that God put there. And we raped and pillaged and took it away.
Right.
So anything we can do in the middle to add some is good, too. But the other thing we can do, and the easiest thing we can do, is to decrease pressure on these ducks, which will increase hunting success. Decreasing pressure will increase success.
Well, Bill, do you think, let me interject here just a minute. Do you think, let's look at this scenario. If we went from 60 days with so-so success to 40 days with good success, I don't think we would lose that many hunter days and the state or states lose that much money, you know, out of their hunter revenue. I may be wrong, but I mean, if I thought I could go to Arkansas and, you know, be pretty much guaranteed a successful hunt, as opposed to going to Arkansas and, you know, hoping to God I see one.
I agree that what that number is, there's a magic number somewhere, whether it's 40, 50, you know, even in the early 60 days. I wrote an article, I'll have to find it, and I'll post it for y'all, talking about my gun broke the first year of a 60-day season. It broke on day 50. And I joke that that's what we built stuff to do, because that was duck season forever, was 50 days. So whether it's a 40-day, a 50-day, or whatever, that I know what I can be satisfied with. I made it through a 30-day, and I'll make it through it again if it comes, 30 and two mallards. But,
well, so here's the thing. Nowadays, with all this cyber scouting and whatnot, a 30-day season, that opens up a multitude of places to go, travel to. You know, hey, I want to go hunt. I want to go hunt the Platte River. I've never hunted there. I want to go hunt, you know, the Butte Sink. I want to go to these places. Well, it's hard for me to leave Arkansas during a 60-day season because, in my mind, I think everything will go to hell in a handbag. And at the LLDC, or, you know, somebody's got to be there to go behind somebody that and fix something that gets torn
up. Let the hole in the pit or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, hey, the water's been going down in this field for 3 days. You know, did you go look at the structures or whatever? But anyway, that would be wonderful, because, I mean, I know a bunch of places I'd go, and I'd pick up aluminum cans up and down the road and be able to take my boys with me. Because that's what I want to do. I mean, I want to hunt with my boys like I did the last day of the season, like I did the first day of the season. Nothing else was really important to me other than, you know, being with family and what few friends I got. So that would open up a lot of doors, and even though people would jump up and down, you know, like a, we'll say what I'm thinking. Even though people would jump up and down about losing all those days in this state, that opens up the door in a bunch of other places to where, you know, you're going to spend $1,000 a weekend or for 3 days to go to Arkansas on a guided hunt. I mean, you can spend that money to go a lot of different places that you've never seen before.
If you made me king tomorrow, duck season would be 45 days with a four-duck limit, three of which could be mallards. Spinners would be outlawed, and my apologies to my good friend Terry Denman. And I believe we would see a big change in duck behavior.
You got my vote. Of course,
you know
damn good and well we're going to get burned in effigy for even saying that, but I don't care, you know.
Hey, I want to ask you something, about y'all, before we go. In the mid-90s, when it was a new system was introduced to the federal government, and it's 9:30 at night, my brain's not working, but the way that they set dates and limits, what was that called? Mid to the late 90s?
Adaptive harvest?
Yes. Adaptive harvest management.
Correct. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. All right. Let me ask y'all this. Y'all have been a part of this world, the inside of it, a lot longer than I have. Ramsey Russell, I may have to go back and edit this out. I don't know. But Ramsey said when that adaptive harvest management, and knowing a few people, that there was a few scientists high up in the Department of Wildlife that quit, that said this was going to ruin duck hunting in the future.
Dave Hall said it to me, just, and Charles Conner, just point blank. He told me that was the worst plan he had seen in the whole time he'd been with the service, and that was part of his doomsday speech that he had given me 10 years before
that. Is that what you were alluding to, Pat?
Yeah. Yeah. He saw the handwriting on the wall. He was a very intelligent person.
Yeah.
But he saw the handwriting on the wall, and then the first time the boys and I go to Louisiana, getting back on this other kick about losing habitat, the guy we were hunting with, a waterman, Dennis Trotler, I mean, he spent his life down there, and with the first place we hunted on the point of this little island, and he pointed to a marker buoy or a channel marker, a post with a light on it. He said, "See that out there?" I said, "That light?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "That's about 200 yards from here." And he said, "Yep." He said, "When I was your boy's age, that was the point of the island that we're standing on." And that was back in when, Patrick? The
early 90s.
Early 90s. Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine what it's like now. You know, it's just, like vanishing paradise is the best way to do it. But, yeah, there's been a lot of bad decisions made by the powers to be, including the point system. That's the most farcical thing on God's green earth. That made preachers.
God, I loved it, though.
Oh, I did, too. But that made somebody that was a preacher, a sinner.
Which tells you it's awful.
I mean. And I guarantee it helped a lot of people in Common Core math. That's for damn sure.
To be fair, AHM, let's face it, we have had basically an unprecedented era of high duck numbers.
Sure.
And that's what those biologists were after. We can give hunters all this access, all this, here all your days and high limits, and retain or maintain duck numbers at that level, barring a horrible weather event, you know, an extended drought, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, it's worked pretty well. But I'm with Pat. The numbers are only part of the story. Hunting has suffered.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've yet to see what this snowpocalypse has done to all these ducks that were up there and weren't down here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could be catastrophic to some populations of birds that, you know, are in an area that, you know, they're trapped. We've seen it. Patrick and I have seen it where, you know, mallards get hung up in Arkansas during that hard freeze, 99, 2000, 2001, that, you know, we were killing mallard drakes that weren't any bigger than a widgeon or a gadwall. They were lost
so much
body weight, and they didn't have the strength to make it north, I promise you. If they did, their nesting success was minimal.
That was the year I actually felt bad shooting ducks.
Yeah, I did too. No, I didn't. But
well, I felt bad. I didn't stop.
Yeah, but I still pulled the trigger. I mean, but and these birds were caught. They couldn't go up. They couldn't go down. They were hung up on those reservoirs. They were trying to feed and slicked over bean fields that, you know, the radial heat had warmed up a little bit. And you know, we were killing some of the every duck we killed wasn't worth picking. It was hard enough to breast them out. The skin was so tight on them. So the same thing could be happening up north now with all this. You know, it's brutal. You know, my friend in Wisconsin, I mean, Iowa, called me this morning. He said, hey, we've got a heat wave. We're up to -9. He said, that's true temperature. He said, -17 chill factor. I mean, that birds can't.
And where were they a week ago?
Well, he said there weren't any there, but I mean, they're not any here either. They may be above all this. We won't know until.
I firmly believe St. Louis and that entire area is probably loaded with ducks right now.
Well,
because
we're
it's
see
just
how
warm.
This
it was
out.
Warm enough 3 days ago. There's open water everywhere. There's not that much snow. It's going to be back up in the 50s by the end of this weekend.
Yeah, that's what this late in the year. Staying in Iowa too, and we're going to be what 60 degrees mm-hmm. Saturday or Sunday. So,
yeah, this
the farther south people are from, the less they understand migration.
Right. Right. Well, everybody's got a theory. It's just like a lot of other things everybody's got one of. But you know, it's just, it scares me. Not so much that mm-hmm. it doesn't scare me as me, a duck hunter, but it scares me as a future that Patrick and Steven and my grandkids are going to have and little Bill and, you know, just anybody else. It's coming up, you know, even the flat brim hat barrel sticker face painters. I mean,
they're
if
people
this keeps
too.
Up, if this keeps up, you know, they're going to be looking for a new sport.
Well, guys, I've enjoyed it. Great discussion. Thank you for all the great points and the information that came along with it. I appreciate y'all taking time this late at night to record this, because I know a lot of people want to hear what you guys have to say, and I just appreciate you taking time. Thank y'all again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.